I've heard from many people this year, Talmidim, friends, something to the extent that Elul has been canceled this year. The way that Elul coincides with the secular calendar, the month of Elul, the Hachana, the Yemei HaDin, is very, very short. Most of us have still been in summer mode the first couple weeks of Elul. In many yeshivas that traditionally begin Rosh Chodesh Elul, this year they began 2 weeks in. We still haven't begun here yet. And therefore, there's very little time to prepare. Very little time to get ready for these special days that are coming upon us. Truth is, personally, most years, on a very personal level, it's very hard to feel the Yom HaNarayim. Yes, Rosh Chodesh Elul, we begin blowing shofar, we begin saying L'David Hashem Oyer V'Ishi, but personally, it's this night, Leil Slichos, standing and listening to the Kaddish of the Yom HaNarayim, the haunting melody of the Kaddish, the Slichos, the Tfilos, that's where generally I begin to feel that these are days that are very special, days that have to be taken seriously. I had a student earlier this week that called me up and asked how they should be preparing for Rosh Hashanah, how they should be preparing for Yom Kippur. And this young woman told me that every single day, at night before she goes to sleep, she takes a cheshbon ha-nefesh. She does introspection and she writes down what she needs to work on, what she didn't do as well as she could have that particular day. And she asked me if it would be appropriate, if I think she should go back and read over all of her notes and look at and analyze all of the different things that she has done wrong. Is that what these days are for? Is that what Yemei Elul is about? And immediately I thought about something I saw earlier that day. I happened to be beginning of the week in Lancaster, Pennsylvania with my mishpacha. And we visited the Hers Snack Factory. We were watching there the factory and they were telling us and showing us how potato chips are made. We had the ability, we had the schus to have potato chips that were 9 minutes earlier a real potato. Kids really enjoyed it. It was very special. And there was one part on the conveyor belt that was amazing to me. You saw these potato chips speeding by 45 miles an hour under this light that the tour guide explained was a laser light that was able somehow, as the potato chips, and this was, I'd say, a conveyor belt about 6 feet wide, hundreds of potato chips, thousands perhaps a minute, speeding by under this light. And this light was able to pick out any potato chip that was green or brown. And if it caught a green or brown potato chip, it sent a message. Underneath the conveyor belt, there were these air guns that were able to shoot up air and knock the potato chip off the conveyor belt so that it wouldn't end up in any of our snack bags. 97% accuracy. Din! Imagine the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is going to analyze every segment of our bodies, every act that we've done, look ourselves over. A pachad, a daiga, is that what we are supposed to be doing now? Are we supposed to be finding the green and brown spots within each and every part of our bodies? It's very difficult. It's very scary. So I thought of a mashal the Chavetz Chaim once gave. There was a soldier in the Russian army. Many, many years was in the Russian army for a very long time, and eventually the Tsar came to him and said, "You've been such a devoted soldier all these years. I'd like to reward you. Any request you have, it's yours." And the soldier thinks to himself for a while and comes back to the Tsar. And the soldier says, you know, I'm an older man already, and the food that the army gives us is not so nutritious, not so delicious. Could, you know, I'd love to have the food that the generals eat. If it's possible, the Tsar could provide me with all the food that the general eats. The Tsar says, for sure, no problem. If that's your request, granted. Do you have any other requests? He says, I have one other request. You know, these barracks, these wooden barracks that we have to sleep on, they're very hard on my back. Very difficult to sleep, very uncomfortable. Perhaps the Tsar could also give me a bed, a comfortable bed like the general sleeps in. I'd love to sleep in that comfortable bed that the general has. And the Tsar says, no problem. We'll get you a nice comfortable bed, some down pillows, down blankets, whatever you'd like, just like the general has. The soldier leaves the Tsar all excited. What wonderful requests have been granted. He's going to eat well, he's going to sleep well. And he sees his friend, some yid, in the army, and he goes over to this yid and he says, you'll have no idea. The Tsar just came over to me and granted me any request, and he's going to feed me the food of the general, and I'm going to sleep in the bed of the general. And the yid, who was a bar chochma, a wise man, he says, why didn't you just ask to be the general? If you were actually a general, so you have our milas, everything wonderful that the general gains, the food, the bed, the transportation, everything would be yours. You're only asking for your food and your bed. We as well, we could go through this month, the Yemei Hadin, and analyze and scrutinize a couple different places within our Avodas Hashem, and beseech of the Rabbanei Shalom to grant our tefillos in certain areas. Or we could throw ourselves in to become a true Eved Hashem. A true Ben Melech. To rebuild our relationship with the Rabbanei Shalom. If we rebuild our relationship with the Rabbanei Shalom, if we act like a son, like a prince to the Rabbanei Shalom, so of course everything that we ask for, everything that we need, Acha Shalti Meis Hashem Osav Akesh, the Rabbanei Shalom will answer it all. So how do we rebuild this relationship? How do we accomplish what Elul is all about? Ani ledodi v'dodi li. Ani ledodi v'dodi li. I am to my beloved is to me. How do I rebuild that deep, special relationship with the Rabbanei Shalom? I believe it's actually very simple. And it's really the source and the key, the makar, and the root of what tshuva is all about. Tshuva, which is to return back to that relationship, to return back to the Rabbanei Shalom. The Medrash tells us that the first person to be mekayim tshuva, the first person to do tshuva in the Torah, is Reuven. In Parshas Vayeshev, the pasuk says, "Vayoshev Reuven al Habar." Reuven returns to the pit. Vayoshev at Tzadik, and the Medrash there tells us that this is the first case of tshuva in the Torah. Very hard to understand. There are other Mamre Chazal that explain that Adam Rishon did tshuva after eating from the Eitz Hadas, and thereby composed Mizmor Shir Li on Hashabbos as Hakaras HaTov. For HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepting his tshuva. Other Chazal teach us that Kayin did tshuva after killing Hevel. What does it mean that Reuven was the first to perform tshuva? And what was the tshuva upon? Rashi tells us the tshuva was upon that act that we know that Reuven switched the beds. We know that his father, after Rachel Imenu passed away, decided to take his bed and put it in the tent of Bilhah, the maidservant of Rachel. And Reuven thought that was a lack of kavod, a lack of respect for his own mother Leah, and switched the beds. What's the connection to Vayoshev Reuven El Habar? Why now was then Reuven doing tshuva on that act because of Yosef being in a pit? So the Beis HaLevi explains very beautifully, why did Reuven switch the beds? Why didn't he have Derech Eretz for his own father who took his bed and put it in the tent of Bilhah? Reuven made a cheshbon. Reuven made a calculation. He thought to himself that all of the children, all of the Shvatim have been born. There are many Mamre Chazal that explain the Kiddush of Klal Yisrael dependent upon having 12 Shvatim, 12 sons, and they've all been born already. Therefore, if they've all been born, now Yaakov being in a tent is purely out kavod for that particular woman. There's no reason for Yaakov to be and show kavod to a maidservant, to a shivcha, and should be in the tent of his mother Leah. Yaakov had a different cheshbon. The Malbim and others explain that Yaakov understood there was a possibility of more sons being born, and Yaakov felt those sons therefore should come from the bias, from the house of Rachel, and Bilhah was the maidservant of Rachel. And Reuven here, when Yosef perhaps would be lost, recognized and realized, wait a minute, now there may only be 11 Shvatim, and the entire Kedusha, the entire holiness of Klal Yisrael will be lost forever. And that is where he realized maybe he made a mistake. And he did tshuva upon that act. When Reuven did that maisa was in no way to be moire, to rebel against his father, rebel against God. That chait, that sin that Reuven did, was a rationalization. That chait that Reuven did with a lacking of proper logic. And therefore the tshuva that Reuven was doing was not on a normal Navera where one has a taiva, where one has some sort of emotional pull just to go against the Rabboni Shalom, but it was a real logical equation which faulted him. That's a very different type of tshuva, a very different type of Avera. And that, the Medrash tells us, is the first case of tshuva in the Torah. Thereby teaching us what? That what tshuva is all about is going back and opening up ourselves with all integrity and all honesty to be as objectively truthful as possible. Reuven had a subjective influence in his decision-making, obviously. He was pulled and pushed by the desire and the kavod he had for his own mother. If we think about the times in our lives when we don't act b'derech Hashem, when we don't necessarily do what it is that Rabbi Nishon wants from us, most often it is not chas v'shalom, we're mired by Hashem, that we just want to rebel and don't want to listen and don't want to follow the Rabbi Nishon. But we rationalize and we convince ourselves that this is MS, that this is right. The tshuva we have to do during these Yom Narayim, the tshuva to be objectively honest and come back to that relationship with the Rabboni Shalom, recognizing and realizing what the Rabboni Shalom wants from us, does is MS. That's all that is MS. Not allowing our own desires and our own thought process to pull us and cause us to stray away from what the Rabboni Shalom wants. Throughout Rosh Hashanah, throughout Elul already, there's tremendous focus on Akedas Yitzchak. We know the shofar that we blow is a siman, is symbolizing many different things. Rav Sajigon has about a list of 10, I believe. But one of the main simanim of the shofar, one of the main things we're supposed to be thinking about is the ayal of Akedas Yitzchak, the ram of Akedas Yitzchak. On Rosh Hashanah itself, when we lay in the parsha of Akedas Yitzchak and Parshas Vayera. Tonight we're going to begin Slichos, and in the Slichos we're going to mention towards the end, Misha Ano, Avramina Baramiria, Hu Yanenu. The one who answered Avram Avinu B'Hara Maria, out of all the things that we emphasize in Avram's life, it's Akedas Yitzchak. And the very next is Yitzchak Avinu Shinekar Al Mizbeach. Akedas Yitzchak. What happened by Akedas Yitzchak? We all know the amazing Mesiras Nefesh of Avram Avinu and Yitzchak Avinu. But perhaps it could be looked at in a different light. My Rebbe Rav Lachman, he once explained very beautifully. He asked and he explained that why is it that we, each and every one of us, sometimes stray away to some degree, to some extent, from the Derech Hashem? Why is it that we rationalize against the Ratzon Hashem? It's because unfortunately in our lives we're not constantly aware and being spoken to by the Rabbeinu Shlom. Akedas Yitzchak, the Rabbeinu Shlom b'chvod v'atmo came to Avraham Avinu and says, Kach nos, binchos, yachidchos, sharhafta, v'lech lecha l'amatzariya. Avraham Avinu is told by the Rabbeinu Shlom, take your son and perform Akedas Yitzchak. Now obviously, that's going to be very, very difficult. His son, who was 37 years old, who he loved, to shecht one's son, we understand, would be done with tremendous tears, tremendous sadness. But if the Rabbeinu Shlom himself asked him to do it, we're going to say no to the Rabbeinu Shlom. It's hard to understand why it was such a great nisayon, perhaps. What was the great test? What was the great trial or tribulation? If Rabbeinu Shalom, the Chvodo, Rabbeinu Shalom himself asked of Avram to do this tremendous mitzvah. So my Rebbe explains very beautifully. If we understand, the Rambam in Hilchos Nevuah explains that only one Navi, only Moshe Rabbeinu, spoke to the Rabbeinu Shalom, panim el panim, ba'as blaklaria me'ira, only Moshe Rabbeinu actually had conversation with God. Every other Navi, including Avraham Avinu, fell into some sort of tardema, fell into a trance, and in that trance had some sort of chalom, some sort of dream, and in that dream, that Navi then had to go and understand and interpret that dream into a message from the Rabbeinu Shlom. And that dream was not necessarily so clear, as we all dream. And that Navi, with that Navi's tremendous chachma of Torah and chachma of this world and chachma of the Rabbeinu Shalom. And if you look in the Rambam, when he explains who the Navi had to be with tremendous midos and tremendous chachma, was then able to take that image and interpret it into what the Rabbeinu Shalom wanted to send to that Navi. So Avraham Avinu, although the psukim seem to tell us, was commanded, panim al panim, by the Rabbeinu Shalom to take his son, Yitzchak and Shech, the son. That's not really how it happened. That was how he interpreted the dream, but it was still a dream that he needed to interpret. And Avraham Avinu, therefore, had a tremendous nisayon, a tremendous test. And that test was to be objectively honest. That test was to look into this tzivoy, to look in this commandment from the Rabbeinu Shalom, and say, even though all of my desires and my ulterior motives and my taiva, my emotion saying the last thing in the world I'd want to do is shecht my son. So if I wanted to, I could take this dream and decide that it can't be the Rabbeinu Shalom wanted me to shecht my son. All he really sent me was to tie him up with a rope and bring him up, symbolizing a korban, and then I'll go and shecht some other animal. He could have decided, as happened in the end, he could have been subjective to that message. The nisayon of Akedas Yitzchak, the nisayon of being an Eved Hashem, is to be objectively and brutally honest with ourselves, and objectively and brutally honest with the Rabbeinu Shalom. That was Akedas Yitzchak. That's why there's such emphasis during these days of honesty, these days of rebuilding our relationship with the Rabbeinu Shalom. That is why in Akedas Yitzchak the Pasuk says, Ki ato yodati ki yare elokim ata. Now I know you're a God-fearing individual. Only now. Avraham Avinu passed already 9 tests. Avraham Avinu threw himself in a fire. Avraham Avinu left his house, but all of those, I'm not going to go through them now, but all of those can be looked at as done out of Avas Hashem. He understood why it made sense. There was no nisayon in the sense of struggling between my own personal desires and the desires of the Ribbono Shel'olam. Comes along Akedas Yitzchak, and everything in it goes against anything I'd want to do. The last thing in the world I want to do is shecht my son. In fact, his whole life he's been preaching against Avodah Zarah, and in those days one of the forms of Avodah Zarah was shechting your children. He's been preaching his whole life against this. And now he's going to go and perform that exact maisa. Akedas Yitzchak is being completely open. It's not about me. It's about Ribbono Shel'olam. That was the tshuva of Reuven. That was the maisa of Akedas Yitzchak. If we look into the slichos that we're about to say, I believe that's what we open up with these exact words. In the first slicha of all of slichos, Eich niftach pel lefanecha dar mesuchim. How can we open our mouth before you? Be'elu panim nishboch sichim. O you who dwell in the stretched out heavens. Listen, ga'alnu nesivosecha yisharim anachoichim. We loathed your forthright and honest paths. Kadosh Baruch Hu just wants us to be honest, to be open. Halachnu achrei masos shav maduchim. We went after vain, deceitful prophecies. We were deceitful with ourselves. We were deceitful with our Ribbono Shel'olam. V'kshinu oref ve'yirasnu mitzachim. We made our necks stiff, our brows brazen. We decide how we want to serve the Ribbono Shel'olam. Tshuva means to open up and be honest with the Ribbono Shel'olam, to rebuild that relationship and how the Ribbono Shel'olam wants us to be with Him. Ani ledodi v'dodi li. We're rebuilding this relationship with the Ribbono Shel'olam. What is at the core of any relationship? The core of any relationship is honesty. Being open, being real, being honest. And that's the first step in our relationship with the Ribbono Shel'olam. Being real. Not convincing ourselves, I'm too tired to learn today. It's been a very long day. I have to run out of Minyan. Quickly, I went to Minyan already. It's okay. Kedusha happened, so I could run out. All the different mind games we play with ourselves. When we rationalize and convince ourselves the way to serve the Ribbono Shel'olam. What is the Akdama of Vidoy? Vidoy, which is the crucial part of our tshuva that we're going to be doing specifically during Yom HaKippur, but during all these days, starting tonight, we start clapping ourselves, Hashamnu, Magadnu. And what are the words prior? What's the Hakdama? What's the introduction? What do we have to work on prior to the actual tshuva itself, which maybe is the foundation of all of tshuva? We say, She'ein anu azei panim k'sheirayirith. We're not going to be brazen and stiff-necked. We're not going to be so full of ourselves. We're going to be open. We're not going to say, Loimar lefanach Hashem l'kenim l'kevaseinu, tzadikim anachnu v'locha tanu. We're not going to say and think, we're tzadikim and we haven't sinned. Avo anachnu v'avaseinu chatanu. Avo anachnu v'avaseinu chatanu, but we have sinned. The Rambam tells us those few words, Avo anachnu v'avaseinu chatanu, is the core of all of Vidui, of all of confessions. 10 times throughout Yom Kippur, we're going to say, Al-Chet Shechatanu Fanecha, Al-Chet Shechatanu Fanecha. But tonight we start saying these words, Avo anachnu v'avaseinu chatanu. Why that word Avo? Why is the word Avo part of that statement? If the Rambam's going to break down Vidoy, confession, into a few simple words as the core, the foundation, what to focus upon. The word Avo, but, really doesn't change much. The but is a transition from the prior statement. We shouldn't say Sadikim anachnu v'lo chatanu, Avo anachnu avaseinu chatanu. But if there's one core few words of Vidoy, it should be anachnu chatanu. We sin. Why the word aval? Why the word but? Many mefarshim try to explain the word aval means in truth, the kushta, omnam. Personally, it's very hard to understand how that adds anything to the statement. Saying anachnu chatanu, saying we sinned, is the same thing as saying in truth we've sinned. Does that statement really change? If I say avo anachnu chatanu, in truth I've sinned, as opposed to saying anachnu chatanu, we've sinned, there's a little greater emphasis. But is that going to be, if the Rambam is going to break us down to a few simple words, that word avo should be there for that in truth? So I thought perhaps you could say, what does the word avo mean? Avo means but. The word but is the key to all rationalizations. The word but is the key to every time we are not objectively honest with ourselves, where we add our subjectivity to any decision we have in life, and we allow ourselves to stray from what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants from us. But, and you can fill it in with anything, but I'm tired, but I had a long day, but I have other responsibilities. Aval anachnu chatanu is saying the core and the key to our vidoy is aval, the word but. No more buts. The tshuva we have to do, and as we hear and hopefully are inspired by the tefillos beginning tonight, the first step in tshuva is just being open and being honest with Ribbono Shel Olam. If we want to rebuild that relationship, we need to find honesty. I read recently the following story I wanted to share. It's about a young man from Los Angeles, Chaim Sholem Kupfer. His experience. One early afternoon, Chaim Sholem boarded the number 3 bus and Rechayiv Panami wrote, in the Matzdorf section of Jerusalem, heading downtown. The bus wound its way around Rechayiv Sorotzkin, passing the noted Torah institutions in the area. Many of us are familiar. Scheinberg's Yeshiva Torah Or is over there. And then came to the next stop to pick up more passengers. Noticing the unusually long line of people waiting to board the bus, the driver opened both the front and back doors and called out, "Tell everyone to get on and let those in the back pass up their money or kartisiot." People jostled their way onto the already crowded bus. Those who entered through the front door had their kartisiot punched as they passed the driver, while those who entered through the back door passed their cards or money forward. An 8-year-old boy made his way up to the driver and extended its kartisiot to have it punched. "I already punched your card," said the driver. "No, you didn't," protested the boy softly. It was hot. The driver had lost his patience a few stops earlier and was in no mood for an argument. "Get inside," he ordered. "You're blocking the people behind you." The little boy looked up to the stern-faced driver and said softly, "Ani lo yachol zegineva. I can't. That's stealing. I told you I punched your card already. Get inside." The little boy walked towards the middle of the bus, downcast. The bus began moving, and after a few hundred feet, the driver stopped the bus. He had looked into his rearview mirror and noticed that the young boy was leaning against a pole in the back, crying. The driver turned to the boy and called him up front. "What's the matter, young man?" he asked. "Why are you crying?" The little boy came forward, looked up at the driver, and repeated softly, "Ani lo yachol. Zegneva. I can't. That's stealing." The driver took out his puncher, took the kartisiyah from the child, punched it, and gave it back. He then patted the boy on the forehead and said with amazement and Jewish pride, "Se yofeh. That's beautiful." This boy had every reason in the world. Every reason in the world to just move on. All the titles would tell you, "I tried, I did what I could." But he was objectively honest with himself, with the Ribbono Shel Olam, Zeh Gneiva. Avo anachnu v'chatanu. No rationalizations. No buts. Ani l'dodi v'dodi li. If we want to rebuild this relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam, we have to open ourselves up and just be purely and brutally honest with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Baruch Hashem, we should all be zocha So we take these last few days prior to Rosh Hashanah, as we enter in this Mesugel Zman, this special time to reach out to the Ribbono Shel Olam and rebuild that relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. If we're able just to open up and be honest, we'll be zoicha to be that general, be zoicha to all the bracha, all the shefa, and a year of simcha, a year of bracha, and a year of nachas.